This is Clusterfucked. Here's your host, Roger King.
This is the Clusterfunk podcast where we waste no time. We know your time is valuable, so we get right down to it. I'm your host, Roger King. I'm going to throw out some very well-known names in American politics and then tell you what they all have in common. Ted Kennedy, Walter Mondale, Gary Hart, former California Governor Jerry Brown, former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, John Edwards, Tulsi Gabbard, Seth Moulton, Alabama Senator Doug Jones. We could even go internationally, Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi and British Prime Minister Tony Blair as well. What do they all have in common? Well, my guest today has worked for or with or as a strategist or as a campaign manager for everyone I just mentioned. He's a legend in Democratic circles and really internationally too. One of the brightest political strategists around, currently a CNN political commentator and strategist media advisor to Senator Doug Jones, who is running for re-election in Alabama this November. My pleasure to welcome Joe Trippi to the Clusterfuck podcast. Thanks for coming on, Joe.
It's great to be with you, Roger, and really look forward to it.
Well, of course, I want to talk about Doug Jones.
Thanks for that embarrassing introduction, but it was nice.
It was a bit of a this is your life, I know.
It really aged me a lot.
I know. I went a little back there.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Doug Jones and the re-election campaign and all of that and maybe some of the other Senate races. But for starters, I'm curious, as I was listing all those candidates you worked with, what makes you say yes to a client, like to working on a campaign? Do you go into each and every one thinking, hey, you're going to win, or at least there's a chance to win? Or have there been some where, of course, you don't have to name any names, but where you agreed to work with them, even though maybe the chances of victory were kind of slim?
I'd say almost for most of them are people I worked with or for who had almost, most people thought they had no chance. Certainly Seth Moulton, certainly Howard Dean, of course, and turned out we didn't make it. But when I started, people didn't know who he was. They had like $90,000 in the bank. No right. one drove to Vermont thinking they were going to go work for the next president of the United States. Right. We tried. To Doug Jones in 2017, no Democrat had won Alabama in 25 years statewide. Again, same thing. No one was going to help him thinking, I thought he could, but most people didn't think he had a shot. I think Walter Mondale was clearly the front runner. I've worked for them too. But it's got to usually, for me, I've worked for some people I didn't know real well. And then were surprised later on, was it a mistake or not? But for the most part, it's people who, I believe in their, what they're campaigning for. And the odds are actually the tougher the odds, the more excited I get about doing the race.
Right. I was going to say maybe the underdog is an appeal, of course, but yeah. They obviously have to have something appealing about them as a candidate because there's lots of underdogs who have no chance.
Well, I've always thought the front runner doesn't need me. There's nothing I can do for it. They're going to win. If you take that tact and they're being careful and not really projecting what I think the country or the district or the state needs, then I'm, there's just no challenge there. Right. I also think, I've always believed, my job is not to help get the way I think or someone to represent me, in any of these states. It's you're helping someone represent the state of Alabama or the state of California in Jerry Brown's case. So you look at the spectrum of people I've worked for, there's a lot of distance between Jerry Brown and Doug Jones. But in the end, I think they're both made, we're the right person for their state at the time that I was helping them.
Well, speaking of frontrunners, just a quick question. Are you doing anything directly for the Biden campaign at the moment or near future?
No. I think gotten past the whatever my obsession was with working on a a national presidential campaign, it destroys you. Mm-hmm. I mean, physically, everything. It is a massive toll. And maybe it's my age now, but I always say this. I tell anybody in this, look, go work on a presidential campaign. It will be the greatest experience you ever had in your life.
Right.
And as soon as it's over, the very next thing you will say to yourself is, please, God, don't let me ever do that again. So having done it in 7 or 8 times, for a lot of really, I think people who would have been great presidents, they were each one of them an amazing experience. And each time I said, don't let me do that again. And then 4 years later, you forget, you remember the greatest experience part and you forget that that what you're about to put yourself through is a killer. And I guess, like I said, as I've gotten a little older or wiser, I can make a difference trying to help Doug Jones win re-election and some other folks. And certainly I will do what I can to help the Biden campaign.
Sure. Well, but, I guess it's like a night out drinking. You forget the hangover, right? Yeah. The presidential campaign.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. But the other side of this is, like, look, that team, most of them have been together for quite a while. And, I wasn't going to get that call anyway, I don't think. I mean, as well as a lot of other people. And, it's a pretty tight-knit group of folks that have been with him, many of them since 1988, when I was with Gary Hart and Dick Gephardt that mm-hmm. year. So I know a lot of them, but we were on different sides. And that's not part of this. I just think they've got a cohesive group that feels like, hey, they've done so well so far. And
right. Why fix it if it ain't broke? Yeah.
Yeah. Why fix it if it ain't broken?
You mentioned Howard Dean. I'm not going to talk about the scream or anything. Don't worry. I just wanted to touch on money and politics for a second before we dive into the Doug Jones and Senate race and all that. So, of course, you were considered a pioneer with the Howard Dean campaign in 2004 in terms of how you went about raising money. You basically started the whole online small donor fundraising era. Do you think now where we're at in political campaigns that money might be a bit overrated? And I mean, obviously you need money to run a campaign. I'm not saying otherwise, but after a certain point, like, Michael Bloomberg proved it, you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have a compelling candidate or a message, you're probably not going to win. There's a sort of perception, I think, particularly on the left, that, money buys elections and all of that. And I feel like the evidence is contrary after a certain point, because you can raise money so easily. I'm thinking of someone like Andrew Yang, who, made an impact, but, raised millions of dollars from a tribe online, but didn't have, wasn't able to get any delegates or win any states or anything. So what are your thoughts now on what I've said here in terms of where we are with money in politics?
Well, I do think money without message is way overrated. And even message money with a narrow message is overrated. Frankly, the best example of that might be Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. He didn't do anywhere near the kind of money that Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or even Yang were raising online. Didn't have any money for TV. Nothing. I mean, didn't do selfie lines, any of that stuff that we saw, and demolished them all. Mm-hmm. In South Carolina and beyond. And I think that's because he is the message. I'm wondering now how many billions of dollars will get spent him attacking Trump attacking Biden. And, really in the end, it doesn't matter, right? The America, it basically, this is the choice, chaos versus community.
Right.
You can trash the hell out of the guy who's community. You can trash the hell out of the guy who's for chaos. The people, American people, are going to decide 4 more years of chaos or community.
Well, the two of them have such strong brands. They're like, 100% name recognition, all of that, right?
Right. So how many, that's what I mean. One of them outspends the other one by $5 billion. Is it really? I think we already know what we know, what we believe about them. I don't think much is going to change. I think that's a problem for Trump. It's also, the thing that that the Biden people have to guard against and is, you know, complacency. Not, I mean, they got to fight everywhere and not get greedy and go into states that, not, you know, basically stay focused on the Electoral College wins, not on, you know, moving the number of battleground states to such a large number that they overextend themselves. But they're in a much better position because I think the country, I think everything that's going on, everything that happens right now is just adding to the chaos that people are tired of and want to end. And he's the way to end it. So I think, getting back to your money question, Joe Biden might be able to go the entire way, being completely outspent by every one of his primary opponents, you know, or a lot of the primary opponents, and then being wildly outspent by Trump. And still, the contrast between Trump screaming at a rally and Joe Biden just being who he is, you know, the former vice president, who knows how to turn the lights on in the Oval Office and wants to bring people together, that'll carry the day.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. Let's dive into the Doug Jones race, in case anyone's forgotten. Of course, Doug won the special election in 2017, defeating the infamous Roy Moore, who will not be the opponent this time around. Roy was one of the losers in the Alabama primary earlier this year. Now it's down to two. The runoff coming next month for the Republican nomination between Jeff Sessions and Tommy Tuberville, a former football coach. Now, Trump, of course, has been very open about his hostility toward Jeff Sessions because he recused himself in the Mueller investigation. Do you have a favorite, like who you would rather face between those two candidates?
I got to confess, I have no idea. I mean, I can, in a given week, I can swing back and forth. I mean, and not just me, everybody in the campaign. I mean, you know, on one day, you're thinking, okay, so Donald Trump, President Trump's out there saying that Jeff Sessions is the biggest mistake he ever made, and you know, campaigning hard, you know, pushing Tuberville hard. Mm-hmm. Then Tuberville goes out, gets asked about what would he recommend on the COVID crisis as it was really heating up in Alabama, and he says his quote, "I wouldn't have a clue." And then you think, okay, well, maybe he's, you know, maybe that's, and he does this a lot. I mean, he's just not, I'm sure-footed at all. It's not the right word for it. It's just colossal. Like, how does anybody say they don't have a clue about what to do about COVID when you're seeking a Senate seat? Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, now I think Session, I mean, my honest assessment right now is that Tuberville's, it doesn't matter who we'd rather have. It looks like it'll be Tuberville. And the reason is because Trump has, you know, been just bashing Sessions. And I can't, and so far it doesn't look, I think Sessions is coming back from that a little in recent weeks. Again, as more, Alabama Republicans get a sense that maybe this Tuberville guy isn't all he's cracked up to be as he keeps making these misstatements. So Sessions is coming back, but I would just be really surprised if Tuberville doesn't carry the day
there.
Doesn't
pull it out,
Yeah, Sessions has been, he was so far back. I mean, he was literally, I think, 18 to 20 points back a week or two ago. And he's coming up. I mean, you can feel that he's definitely moving, but I just don't know. It's a lot of ground to make up in a month, but maybe there's time, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could be kind of fun to have Trump undermining Sessions if he was the opponent, because I think Trump has actually endorsed Tuberville, hasn't he?
Yeah. Well, he's endorsed Tuberville. Yeah. And Tuberville's ads are all, I want you to know, I'll have President Trump's back 100%. So that's what I'm saying. You have this, it all very much like the 17 race where Luther Strange and Roy Moore were going at it. there was a split in the part. I mean, there's this group. So if Sessions gets it, there are a whole bunch of Republicans who know Trump doesn't like Sessions. That doesn't mean they'll vote for Doug Jones, but what are they doing? Do they just not vote for Senate if it's Sessions? It's going to be harder for Sessions to coalesce that group, mm-hmm. and bring them all to him. And then likewise, there are going to be a lot of Sessions voters who are less inclined to vote for Tuberville. The same kind of split we had that went out of the runoff that happened with Roy Moore and Luther Strange in 2017. And, you got a lot of the Sessions voters are voting for, they don't want somebody who doesn't have any experience. In other words, they're attracted to Sessions because he was a senator, had attorney general, knows how Washington works, et cetera, and are worried about this Tuberville guy who doesn't have a clue about COVID, right? So if
certainly no comparison experience-wise between the two of them. I mean, Tuberville doesn't have anything.
Right, and what I'm saying is that those are people you may be able to talk to. Mm-hmm. Doug Jones may be able to talk to those people, right? Because he's been in the Senate. He's passed 17 bipartisan bills that Donald Trump signed all 17 of them.
Right.
I'm not talking about, big chunks, but if we can pull 3 or 4 points here, a point or two there, Republican women, because of the bills that he's passed, that he has striven for common ground and trying to bring people together in all this chaos and polarization. I mean, that's how we won in 2017. And there's certainly even more division and chaos today. And I think the same desire to find common ground and come together.
That's a perfect segue, because on this podcast, I focus on how Democrats can win more often in red states, which, of course, often means persuading Republican voters. What was the approach in 2017 in terms of doing that? And what's it going to be in 2020 for the Jones campaign?
Well, I mean, it's not just in Alabama. I've seen this everywhere. Increasingly, in 2017, even we were seeing it, that Republican women were literally in 2017, a lot of them would talk about feeling like they were on the edge of their seat every day with what was going on in the country. Mm-hmm. This was only a year into the Trump presidency. But they were already had a lot of anxiety about and responded to somebody who was trying to find common ground and bring people together. And the other two groups were younger Republicans who were bothered a lot by the race stuff that was happening. And I can't imagine that that's diminished much. If nothing, it's more heightened. In other words, they're not. Right. They want to. To come together and end the racial divide. They're not in that younger generation on all sides, but we see it with a lot of younger Republicans as well. They were part of the group, and college educated or some business Republicans, which that also has heightened as you get, with what Trump's done on tariffs and in other things, but I just think that the group that was there that we were able to win over, those groups have probably grown in size.
Right.
I think we're in much better position today than we were in 2017. We didn't, and in the meantime, we didn't have a whole lot to say. I mean, it was just trust me. I'm going to bring people together and get things done.
He's been in the Senate for 3 years and he's got a record. And
he's actually gotten 17 And they really are bipartisan bills. I mean, like, you know, the widow's tax, repealing that, which was something that Sessions led that bill all the years that he was in the Senate, and never got it done. And it was a bill that just gave families of military insured that they get their full benefits. Mm. This is a bill that you go like, why
would it ever? Yeah, why would there be a delay?
Right, never happened. Year and a half in, not years of Sessions, nothing. Year and a half in, Doug Jones got that bill passed.
You got it done.
And got the widows. And that's what I mean. We're talking about Alabama, a state that's strong military, and here is probably the last guy. I mean, if you just know who Democrat, Republican, which one was going to get it done, and for who, it was Doug Jones. So we've got to explain all that. I mean, there's 17 of those, and like I said, Trump signed every one of them. Yeah, certainly lots of times when Jones and Trump didn't agree on things, but he worked every day to try to find common ground and actually get things done for the people of Alabama, and was, I think, more effective.
Which is really his job. You know, I mean, that's his job.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. And I saw that, I think one of the first ads came out today where you're emphasizing the racial harmony part that you mentioned earlier, which I guess if you're getting Republicans, like you say, who are interested in that, combined with, of course, you want to gin up African-American turnout in Alabama, that's the combo, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. The people that we need to try to reach are people who are really bothered and struggling with all this division that's going on right now, and not just race, but a lot of the things that Trump goes out about, and what you find is that, like I said, women and younger Republicans and college educated and the business Republicans know that this is not good. To have the country tearing apart at the seams over a lot of the things that are, you know, and for anybody to be fueling that division is just not a good thing.
Right.
So, you know, he campaigned in 2017 on finding common ground. He's done it for 3 years. We have been trumpeting for the better part of the last 2 years, one Alabama, that's what he wants the people to join together as one Alabama and start solving problems together. We didn't know any of this stuff was going to, be exploding the way it is right now. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of ways, he's been speaking directly to this from the day he was, before he was elected.
Right.
And part of that does come from the church bombing. I mean, you know, he, you know, clearly that the 16th Street church bombing where the four little girls were killed, that he prosecuted and put those two Klansmen behind bars for that crime, like years, decades after it happened. I think that always has been sort of this drive to bring people that he has. It was like finding justice delayed. Doesn't mean justice can be denied, and he was going to go for that no matter how long it took, and he did it. And I think in all of that, he really, at his core, is how do we end that divide? How do we bring people together? How do we end that that intolerance, that just pure evil?
Yeah, it was already an impressive part of his character and bio, and now it fits the moment even more.
Yeah,
so,
that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't have. You know, I couldn't have predicted where we'd be. Now, I think from what I saw in 2017 and the people of Alabama and how they responded to him, I think that's what I'm saying. I think that has grown, with people. I mean, like I said, I think there are more women in Alabama, more young people who recognize his character and what bringing people together, him, what he's capable of, would be far better than Sessions or Tuberville. That's the case we'll make.
Right.
And I feel really good about, again, sort of like you said, we've got to do two things. I've always thought this about our whole party. I just wish I could scream it, you know, because it's, you know, this whole, we've got to energize our base and get everybody out and not worry about those folks. And then the we need to go over and we don't worry about our base so much. Take it for granted. We need to move over here and get these other folks that don't vote for us. Well, no, we got to do both things.
Right.
And in 2017, we did. We got a massive turnout, and we won a lot of these Republican women, a lot of these younger Republicans, a lot of people I've talked about so far with you.
Yeah.
They came enough. We only won by like 23,000-something votes. But you know, it was 25 years in the making.
Well, yeah, and, it's Alabama. I mean, yeah.
And we pulled them over, we pulled enough over to win, you know. And I think that's grown. We'll see. But and look, we need all the help we can get. I mean, it's not going to. They're going to spend. They're already, you know, spending tons of money, and McConnell and everybody will be in there. This gets back to your earlier question about the money. Yeah,
yeah.
It can make a really big difference, particularly for somebody with Doug Jones' character, who's willing to take a stand and really make the case to the people of Alabama that's compelling. But we're still going to have the money to do that. So, in that sense, I do think all the online stuff that started with Dean and, you know, it's made candidates like Doug Jones possible.
Right. Absolutely.
It's a different thing at the, you know, at a state level, I think, than for president when, you know, it's really important in the Jones effort, you know, I can tell you for sure in 2017, there's no way we would have withstood what they were pounding us with without everybody out there, you know, doing what they could, and whether it was $5 or $10, but it made a massive, massive difference. And we're going to have to have that. That's a critical thing that's going to happen with us. It's already happening to us. We now just need to get people to start. And it's tougher this year because there's so many other races and there's the presidential race. I mean, the one advantage we had in 2017 with the Democratic donors, small dollar donors out there, was that we were, you know, in 2017, it was a special, eyes on us.
You were the only game in town of the.
Well, we're gonna need it just as bad this time, but
right,
now there's other good people that need it too. But.
Well, that said, though, I mean, it is the most obvious seat the Democrats need to defend, and most of the time they're going on the offense. And on that note, before I let you go, can I get your quick assessment of a few other Senate races that most people believe will be competitive, the pickup opportunities that you think? I'm assuming you'd start with Colorado and Arizona and go from there, but where else do you think Maine, Iowa, North Carolina, those places are good pickup opportunities for the Democrats?
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question that the last few months have moved. The country has moved and shifting away. Trump's favorability is dropping. That's impacting a lot of these races. You see it in a lot of the public pollings in most of these states where the Senate, and to the point now where you could have seven Senate seats that are competitive, at least, if not, yeah, I mean, I actually think more will come online mm-hmm. than we're not even necessarily looking at. So, you know, right now, the one thing I would caution, though, is that as we've seen, everything's really volatile a month and a half from now, 2 months from now. I don't see this. That's what I'm saying. Anything that could possibly happen to change the dynamic, I don't think it's going to change the chaos dynamic. It's going to add to it. So in other words, you know, the economy's not going to recover tomorrow and COVID's not going away.
Right.
And the Senate, you know, whether there's any real action on the racial inequality that's been exposed, even if all sides came together tomorrow, that's going to take a while. Right. And I, you know, so I, I just don't see what it is that changes the current dynamic. The current dynamic is a disaster right now for the Republicans. I don't see they need a their presidential nominee was somebody who was saying in this moment we need to come together and but he's going to double down on it on all the divisions. So I would say, look, right now it is if we can do the both things, get our base out, get people energized to vote. I think Trump does a lot of that for us. But yes, we need to do it. And at the same time, invite the Republicans who are troubled by all this to join us. They will. If, on the other hand, we're turning out our base and pushing them away from us, then we make it a closer election than it needs to be, and we leave seats on the table.
Yeah, I've never understood that. Like you said earlier, we've got to go for one block of voters or another. Why wouldn't you go for whoever you can get without compromising your principles, of course? But, I thought that was what was great about Obama's campaigns was he was clearly going after different baskets of voters and with different messages, and it all worked.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. We did that I think it's easier in a period where there's so much division, because then it's not about party or any of this other stuff. It's like, look, it's really simple. Do you want to be divided, angry at each other, hating your neighbor, or do you want to come together and actually try to find some place where we can agree and make this better? Okay, now, I don't really care what party you're in. There aren't enough people in this country who want to do the divided hatred thing. There are plenty of them, but not enough. And that means there's a lot of Republicans. That's what I saw with Jones. The people that were turned off by Moore or don't like Sessions, if they look across the aisle and the person we put up is some angry Democrat railing at the Republicans.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to go. I mean, forget that. But that's not what they saw. They looked over there and here's a decent, civil guy with a big heart who actually cares about people and wants to bring them together. And when they saw that, there were a lot of Republican women who said, okay, I can choose more chaos, or I can choose decency, civility, and someone who wants to try to heal. Well, there are a lot of people out there who will. And that's, by the way, I think that's what sustained Joe Biden through those primaries. There were plenty of people railing and doing great, railing against the system or against the Democratic establishment or whatever, and making good points. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the one guy who all the way through just seemed like that decent, civil guy who would try to bring people together and fight for the soul of the nation, as boring as that might have sounded to a lot of, angry progressives or progressives who wanted to change everything right now. And by the way, I'm one sometimes, that's what I'm saying. It's just sort of like I think Biden, that's why he was able to just sort of, literally, without a whole lot of effort, roll that field.
Yeah, because it's just a reset, calm down, end the chaos. Yeah. Let's be civil, kind of message, both from Biden and from Doug Jones. They're mirrors. It's great. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to join me here on the podcast. Obviously, we'll keep a close eye on the Doug Jones race as we head towards November, and we'll look for you on CNN. Appreciate your insights, Joe. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you, man. Take care.
I appreciate it. Thanks, man. Well. A legend, Joe Trippi. So many campaigns over the years, going back to the Ted Kennedy Super PAC in 1980 and Walter Mondale and Gary Hart and Howard Dean and all the rest. Great to talk politics with Joe. You can find Joe on Twitter at Joe Trippi. That's TRIPPI, in case you didn't know how to spell it, at Joe Trippi. And Doug Jones, might as well go to his website too, DougJones.com, and throw a few bucks because it sounds like they'll need it down in Alabama to try and win re-election, at Doug Jones. He's, of course, on Twitter as well. And I'm on Twitter, too. The Civil Liberal, But the handle is at CF the Podcast. You can follow me there. The website is cfthepodcast.com. I always mention it. It's where all the episodes are, plus other information about this fine program. There's a place there where you can support the podcast if you're so inclined. This is a labor of love. As I always say, I don't have a major investor. You don't hear any commercials. There are no advertisers. So it's just from the goodness of my heart that I do this. But there are expenses associated with this fine broadcast. We're recording at the wonderful studio dbaudio.ca. I also have website and audio hosting expenses and some other marketing things. So if you're feeling generous and you do like our podcast, what we do here, go to cfthepodcast.com, click support the podcast, throw us a few bucks. We love it. You know, whatever you're not throwing to Doug Jones, throw it our way. We're on Facebook as well. You can search for us, CF the Podcast. Just like the page, and we post all kinds of articles and have discussions about things, topics that we cover on this fine program. It is available as well. If you're not listening at cfthepodcast.com, you can find it on Stitcher and iTunes and Google Play and Spotify, all the podcatchers, as they call them in the industry. The important thing is you listen. But we do like the visits to cfthepodcast.com, especially when you sign up for the mailing list so we can keep in touch. Anyway, thanks for taking the time to listen.
The Clusterfuck Podcast, a liberal host with red state guests.
This is Roger King. That'll be all.